Well, good morning, brethren, or good morning again, brethren. It seems everybody visits the information booth at one time, and I get to say hello to everybody on a one-on-one often because of that. I want to just say I had the opportunity yesterday. I took the opportunity. Maybe some of you can do the same, to talk to Mr. Keener and talk about what a great job he's done with the corral here. I think I may be somewhere in my 48 years of keeping the feast, I've heard a corral that was that good, but I don't remember when. But again, you get old, you forget things. But I thought he did a magnificent job, and they really, I'm sure it's not just him, but the entire corral has put together just a great presentation, and I appreciate it, and I'm sure you do too. Well, I'm an old guy, and I'm semi-retired now, and I notice when a lot of us old guys get together, it's kind of discouraging, particularly the people I've worked with over the years. Some of them are retired too, and sometimes when we get together, we talk about how good things used to be, and they're not like that anymore. You know, in my industry, the one I was in, so much of it has gone to computers, and if you're familiar with the radio industry a lot anymore, there aren't a lot of disc jockeys around, and those that aren't making much money because basically they go in and they can do a four-hour show in 20 minutes by putting it all in a computer. And a lot of other things have happened and changed, and everybody kind of, well, it's not like it used to be in the old days. And we often, in our conversations, particularly when we haven't seen people in a while, we get together at an opportunity like this, and we think, boy, it's just not like the old days. Talking about the state of the world today and some of the horrible things we see, and granted, that's true, but I don't think the good old days were quite as good as we remember. Because I can think back and think back to times when, you know, things were not like they should be. But a lot of people, oh, I remember when we used to leave our doors unlocked at night, which is a foolish thing to do. I used to do it, too, and we lived in a proper suburban neighborhood, and I don't think anything bad resulted from that. But we tend to think of, oh, it was pretty good back then. And again, I'll question that because I'm not sure it was. Maybe it was better than it is now. But we're not here to reflect on that. We're not here to look back and say, boy, it was good back then. We're here to look forward and to see some of the good things that are coming, some of the changes that are coming. You know, and again, I can look at many areas where, of course, a lot of it gets blamed on the media. I'll blame the media for a lot of the discouraging news we hear because we're getting a lot better, the media, I still do a little of that, at reporting the news. And if something horrible happens, we're more likely today to hear about it than we would have been 30 or 40 years ago. So, in fact, I remember a few years ago, I remember Dick Cheney and his hunting accident, where the vice president of the United States accidentally shot a hunting buddy. Didn't shoot him directly, but some of the buck shot, I think, straight over there. I mean, that was a big news story. What if the vice president of the United States did something like that deliberately? Well, that wouldn't have happened back in the good old days, would it? Back in the colonial days, back when our country was new? Yes, it did. The vice president of the United States shot and killed the secretary of the treasury in a duel. Some of you may remember that, and some of the parties involved, Andrew Hamilton, whose name is on the, his picture is on, I was going to get my wallet out and figure out which bill it is, but it's on a bill. I think he and Benjamin Franklin are on bills. Franklin, I know, is on the 100, because I don't see him that much, and when I do, I remember. But Aaron Burr is kind of a character lost to history. I don't know what happened to him after that, but that happened back in the good old days. I mean, when politics was really vicious. You know, again, we see the political campaigns today, and we say, boy, it's really nasty. It's never been that bad before. Well, yes, it has. But again, my main point is we're not looking back. We're not here to look back at the good old days. We're here to look forward. I was going to say to the good old days, to the good new days. Of course, for many of us, particularly people my age, the good old days were the good old days because you felt a lot better. You felt you were young, you were healthy. Now you have pains in places you didn't even know you had places. And it hurts sometimes to get up in the morning. But we're here to look forward to the good new days upcoming. Matthew 24 and verse 27. Matthew 24, verse 27, beginning in verse 27, we hear and read about what we're celebrating this time of the year through the fall holy days, the Feast of Trumpets, the Day of Atonement, the Feast of Tabernacles, the last great day. For as lightning comes from the east and shines even into the west, so shall be the coming of the Son of Man. For wherever the carcasses is, there shall the eagles be gathered together. Immediately after those days, the tribulation of those days, shall the sun be darkened. This is going to be something that we cannot avoid, that the world cannot avoid. It will be unprecedented, an unprecedented time of change. And the moon won't give her light, the stars shall fall from heaven, the powers of heaven shall be shaken. And there shall appear as the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. And then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn. And they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. This isn't going to be done secretly. This isn't going to be done quietly. It's going to be unavoidable. Unavoidable. A time of unavoidable change. This will bring about, like I say, an unprecedented time of change. If you think things have changed in the past, hang on to your socks, because they're really going to change when Jesus Christ returns. And today I'd like to look at some areas, and you can probably think of others, but just scan the surface of some areas where we can expect to see change when Jesus Christ returns. One would be agriculture. I don't know if we have any farmers here in the Midwest like this. I'm sure we have some who are either full-time farmers or maybe like me, keep a little patch in the backyard, which I enjoy. I'm not good at it, but I enjoy it. We did get a little corn this year, and I think we're still getting some okra. Now, I've learned you don't boil okra. I think it is the slimiest substance known to man. I believe you could lube your car with it. I like fried okra, but I'm not creative enough to be able to do that effectively, so we cut the okra up and put it in salads. We've eaten a lot of okra lately because one little plant, once it matures, it seems like they just keep coming. And if you don't pick them right away, they get tough and nasty. But I have okra, I've grown a few tomatoes, I had a very little bit of lettuce and a few other things. But if you're a farmer, you can look forward to Amos 9 and verse 13. Amos 9 and verse 13. Of course, for farmers, sometimes it works both ways. If you have a bad year, of course, you have a bad year. That's not good when your crops aren't good. If you have a good year, sometimes that causes prices to go down. So you're caught at both ends sometimes. But look at Amos 9 and verse 13, talking about agriculture in the coming kingdom, and this should be encouraging because we're going to have a lot of people to feed, probably even in the thousand-year millennium, and after that, a tremendous number of people to feed. Behold, the days will come, saith the Lord, when the plowman shall overtake the reaper. You know, the guy that's picking the stuff will be catching up to the guy who's planting it. And the treader of grapes, he that sows seed, and the mountains shall drop sweet wine, and the hills shall melt. You know, just wine coming out of the hills, coming out of the vineyards. A great time of agricultural prosperity is coming. Isaiah 30 and verse 23. Isaiah 30 and verse 23. Then shall he give rain of thy seed, that thou shalt sow the ground withal, and the bread of increase of the earth, and it shall be fat and plenteous in that day, and thy cattle shall feed in large pastures. You know, a lot of land for cattle to feed. If you drive through the Ozarks, you can see a lot of that, a lot of hillsides covered with cattle that are fattening up, and in many cases, it's feeder cattle that are then sent off to feedlots where they're fattened up and sold. but we can look forward to that time when cattle will feed in large pastures. So we will see an unprecedented increase and prosperity in the agricultural community. You know, now we hear about droughts, and now we hear about floods. We've had a lot of floods here in Missouri, and either of those extremes is not good for agriculture. Seems like, on my garden this summer, we've just had a wonderful summer. We've had just the right amount of rain. It's been warm but not oppressively hot. Well, some of you are from the Ozarks. You know that. You people who are not from the Ozarks, if you're here for the first time and you think, boy, this is wonderful, it's like this all year round. I shouldn't stand up here and lie. It's a lot like it is. I'm a New Yorker, like I've said before. I'm a New Yorker by birth and a hillbilly by choice. And coming from New York State, I'm used to real winter, you know, where it really got cold. And then, of course, if you're from North Dakota or somewhere like that, or Montana, perhaps, that's nothing compared to what we have. So we don't have perfect weather. We don't have a perfect agricultural environment. We're going to see changes in the environment as well. Isaiah 11, beginning in verse 6. And this will include, I think, my favorite feast time scripture. Isaiah 11, beginning in verse 6. This is something we read to our kids a lot because kids tend to like animals, as evidenced by the fact that there were all these animals up here yesterday. They're gone. And hopefully the kids are enjoying them. Kids like animals. Sometimes animals that they shouldn't like. Well, my son really liked animals. He had two pet skunks. He also liked and still likes snakes. He has in his home a python. Fortunately, he keeps it in a terrarium where it can't get out. But a few years ago, we had a power outage, and my wife and I went to stay with our daughter because she had power. We didn't. And it was out for over a week. And then my grandchildren came over to stay. And we didn't know it until we were leaving, but they brought the python. My son started this when he graduated from high school. He one night brought home, or I guess he kept it in the car, a snake. I think it was a boa or something. And he had a girlfriend. And I said, "You're not bringing that thing in this house. You can take it to your girlfriend's house and leave it there," which he was kind enough to do. But kids like snakes. Of course, this little guy was only 18 at the time. He just turned 50. And still likes animals, still has his python. But Isaiah 11, beginning in verse 6, "The wolf shall dwell with the lamb." It doesn't happen today. Quite like that. The wolves, I think, do like to have the lambs over to dinner. The lambs being the dinner. And the leopard shall lie down with a kid, the calf with a young lion, the fatling together with a little child, and a little child shall lead them. You know, we've had that in a lot of our logos, a lot of our artwork for the church. The cow and the bear shall feed, the young ones shall lie down together. The lion shall eat straw like the ox. The sucking child shall play on the hole of the asp, a deadly snake. The weaned child, probably, I could put Carl Pirowitz in there, my son, you know, he would have probably put his hand on the cockatrice den. You don't do that today. These animals are dangerous. But all creation, the entire world, the entire universe will live at harmony with each other, and we won't have these deadly animals being deadly to little children particularly. Chapter 35 and verse 7, Isaiah 35 and verse 7. "And the parched ground shall become a pool, the thirsty land springs of water, the habitation of dragons, where each lay shall be grass and reeds and rushes." You know, a well-watered earth. We hear today a lot about global warming, and I don't listen to him much anymore, but I used to listen to Rush Limbaugh quite a bit, and he would talk about environmental wackos. Maybe some of you are Rush fans and heard that. I've heard that many times. Well, I'm trying to think, when you hear words like environmentalism and I'm trying to think about ecology. Where was the first place I ever heard that brought up as an issue? To my knowledge, maybe I just don't get out much, it was in the church. You know, we did articles in various publications on the dangers that are being posed to our ecology now. So perhaps we're a bunch of environmental wackos. I don't know. But the environment will be cleansed. It'll be, you know, in harmony with itself. We'll have a clean and a wonderful environment. Another area that's, well, not dear to my heart, but close to my heart, that will change is the military. How many guys here are over 65? And how many veterans do we have in the house today? That's a traditional thing, you know. I don't want everybody to stand. If you want to raise your hand, that's fine. I'm a veteran. But in a lot of the Branson shows, if you go, they'll ask all the veterans to stand up, you know, or maybe separately. Everybody who was in the Army stand up, and I'd stand up and sit down, and everybody in the Navy, and the Air Force, the Marine Corps. Then they'd get down to the Coast Guard, and maybe there was one guy. Or nobody stood up, because not that many people were in the Coast Guard. But some of us were in the military. We were veterans. It played, to some degree, a major part in our lives. That's going to change. Turn to Isaiah 2. Isaiah 2 and verse 4. You've heard this before. If you've been to the United Nations building, you've seen the statue outside. And he shall judge among the nations, and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares, their spurs into pruning hooks, their spears, maybe their spurs too, but their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Instruments of death will be turned into farm implements. You know, that effort that we put forth during wartime, you know, think of all the manufacturing that took place during World War II in the United States and in Russia, perhaps as well, where tremendous amounts of material were produced to help us go out and kill the enemy, who sometimes was, depending on which part of the country you're in or which part of the world you may have served in if you were in World War II, you know, were sometimes people just like us. You know, we found it easy in our neighborhood to hate the Japs, as it was they were called back then. We weren't quite so hard on the Germans, because most of us were Germans. My grandfather came over from Germany. Many of the kids I grew up with, they were of German extraction. So we found it wasn't quite as emotional. In fact, my dad's cousin was a veteran. He was in the Navy. He was in the German Navy, so we had relatives on both sides. He claimed that he never saw much action. He said he was in the Baltic, and he said we shot down a plane once. He said, but I think it was British, so I guess he was just trying to be cordial and not start an argument, although I'm sure he appreciates, he died in Canada, moved to Canada, and spent a lot of time in New York State with us as he grew older, but we had Pirwitzes on both sides, and there were undoubtedly Eisenhowers on both sides. So we were a little easier on the Germans. But again, if you were a young man, anytime up till, what, the late 70s, maybe I'm trying to think when the draft was done away, that was kind of a certainty. My wife remembers the 50s. What a carefree decade that was, wasn't it? That was so carefree, and we all listened to Bill Haley and the Comets and Rock Around the Clock and the Everly Brothers and all that music and in the good times. Now, I don't know if you other guys who are my age felt that way, but I felt doomed during the 50s because I knew that after I got out of high school, I had a couple of choices. One was to go on to college and then be drafted when I got out, or go in the military right away or just wait to be drafted. I didn't want to be drafted, so I went and joined right away. But that was a certainty for many of us, to go off and learn to kill people and break things, which is basically what the military does. Now, they may tell you different. My Army recruiter didn't tell me about that. He said, this is the modern Army. We wear modern Army green. And some of our barracks are air-conditioned. Wow, sounds nice. I didn't find those barracks anywhere. But, you know, this is, and you know, in the Army, one of the reasons I joined, you could pick your vocation. You could pick the job you wanted. So I was knew that when I got out, I wanted to be a police officer. Because my dad was once stopped and picked up and for speeding by the New York State Police. And the trooper who wrote him the ticket was so nice about it. And such a gentleman, and really a good police officer, I guess, at least for those few moments. And I had a lot of respect for him. And I thought, well, I don't want to just be a cop. I want to be a New York State trooper. So I studied up, found out I was 5'9". To be a trooper, you had to be 5'10", or taller. I don't know if that's the case anymore. And we lived a few miles from Canada, and I said, well, I had read. I was in Korea doing a lot of reading. I read about the Northwest Mounted Police, or the RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted Police. I said, they're kind of an elite organization. I used to listen to Sergeant Preston of the Yukon on the radio, and I thought, maybe I'll go there. Maybe I'll go to Canada and become a Mountie. Then I found out they had one stipulation that I didn't like. My wife and I were engaged at the time. It's her fault I'm not Sergeant Preston of the Yukon. But they required what for me would have been 5 years of celibacy. You couldn't get married for 5 years. That was so they could take the young guys and send them up to the Northwest Territories or Northern Quebec or the Yukon and, you know, places you wouldn't want to take a family. But how did I get off on the Mounties? But anyway, so I decided I didn't want to be a police officer. Yeah, I could pick my job in the Army. So I went in the Army, as many of you did probably, and learned to kill people and break things. No matter what else your job was, that was your primary, what we used to call your MOS, your military occupational specialty. Other men did even braver things. They admitted they were conscientious objectors. And I know that affected a lot of guys who were in the church at the time. I wasn't in the church. I didn't even know about the church. But they were conscientious objectors. That took a lot more courage in some cases than to go out and become a soldier. In my case, I never saw any real action, so I had a pretty easy military career for 3 years. But that was a big part of our lives. A big part of our lives was the military, and that's going to change. That's going to go away. As it says here in the last half, neither shall they learn war anymore. I can name you three prestigious universities where a young man, if he's selected, can go and not have to pay tuition and can learn war. West Point, the United States Military Academy, the United States Naval Academy in Annapolis, and also the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs. And they're going to be gone. We are no longer going to produce people who learn war. Imagine that, your entire career learning to kill people and break things on a grand scale. And one of the greatest warriors in American history, Douglas MacArthur, and I've been trying to find this exact quote, but I've heard him quoted several times, saying what a useless effort war is. It doesn't produce anything. It does a lot of damage. And I guess in a purely physical sense in our society today, it's a necessary thing. But that's going to change. That's going to be gone. We're not going to have a military anymore to take a few years of a young man's life, as was my case. Or maybe somebody becomes a career soldier, or maybe somebody joins the military and ends up dying as a result, giving their life for their country. That's not going to happen anymore. And no longer are they going to learn war. That's going to change. You know, I kind of liked the Army. When I was getting ready to get out, fortunately, I found out about the church and what God expected of me, and I realized I can't stay in the Army and do that. So I got out and became a civilian, which I think is a lot more fun. Another area that's going to change is health. Of course, we hear a lot about health care, but just general health. In Isaiah 35 and verse 5, I'm reading a lot out of Isaiah here. We'll get into the New Testament a little later. But I know one minister at one time I tend to think of prophecy, and many of you perhaps do as well, as sort of doom and gloom and hellfire and brimstone. Well, he made the point that, and I'm not sure this is absolutely true, that the majority of what you find in Isaiah is positive. I haven't gone through and counted verses, but there's a lot of positive prophecy in the book of Isaiah. And in verse 35, chapter 35, beginning in verse 5, "And the eyes of the blind shall be opened." Some of you know people who are blind. I have a friend who's blind who was in the Springfield Church and then moved to Sykeston. Some of you may know him from there, and subsequently retired and moved to Nashville. But he was, I guess fortunately you might say, blind from shortly after his birth and was very, very capable. I think he even bowled. I think somebody would line him up on a bowling alley and he'd bowl and maybe knock down a few pins. Maybe he probably did better than me, as I was in a bowling league when I was a kid and I was not any good at it. But he would do that, and I always used to kid him about driving, that maybe someday I'd let him drive. And I've heard about some people. I think Ray Charles allegedly used to ride his motorcycle, but he had somebody in front of him, and the person in front, he would just, by the sound of the motorcycle in front, would find his way around a track. But I did another thing one time. There's a lady here who I got one of these, I wore it the other day, I think it's one of these bright red ties. And I came in and to church one day, she says, "Oh, I like that orange tie." I said, "It's red." And so the next time I wore it, I got together with this blind guy. And I came in, she says, "Oh, you're wearing that orange tie." I said, "This is red. Let's get him over here and see what he says. He's the authority. What color is this?" He'd say red, and I'd feel really good. But so, you know, we deal with blind people, some who are very capable. And this guy made his livelihood for the state counseling people who were going blind. But that's not going to happen anymore. There aren't going to be blind people. Their eyes will be open. The ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. I had a feast a few years ago. I was invited to go to lunch with a friend of mine from Wichita, and we sat with several people who were from Wichita, and because I was living there at the time, and were deaf. Well, this presented quite a problem. How do you communicate with a deaf person when you don't know how to sign? And I got a brilliant idea. I took a stack of 3x5 cards and a pen, and I sat with one lady, and I sort of passed notes with her. And we got along that way, but sometimes it's very difficult to communicate with someone who's deaf. But their ears are going to be unstopped. "Then shall the lame man leap as a hart, the tongue of the dumb shall sing. The wilderness shall waters break out as streams in the desert." Just a healthy, healthy environment. I know one lady who I think has moved to Arizona but attended the Springfield Church for a while. She was unable to really speak or sing, so she would sign. I don't think anybody would understood what she was signing, but it was beautiful the way she did it. And sing her praises to God with her hands and follow along the hymnal. But we're going to see a time of unprecedented good health. We don't have that today. You know, again, some of you, particularly as you get older, you get aches and pains and, you know, you forget things. I forgot all the things I've forgotten. And if I forget something, I usually, my excuse is, well, yeah, but I've slept since then. So sometimes we're going to have a time of radiant health for everybody. Justice. We'll have true justice. Isaiah 11, beginning in verse 1. Isaiah 11, verse 1. "And there shall come forth the rod of out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots." That's Isaiah 11, verse 1. Verse 2, "And the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord." How many of our judges today have a fear of the Lord, or our attorneys? I have a guy that I run into quite often, and I did testify in a trial one time where on behalf of one of his defendants, but he's one of the best-known criminal attorneys in the area. I don't remember how he was dressed, but Warren Ott, who's handling the ushers here, I think, I hope I got the story right, was in a restaurant one time and somebody mistook him for the guy. But this guy is, and he's very cordial and very nice, but he's a defense attorney and he represents some really bad dudes. But, and that's his job, you know, to represent them and to present their case. And shall make them of quick understanding in the fear of the Lord, and they shall not judge after the sight of the eyes. You know, we make so many judgments even ourselves by what we see, by what somebody looks like. I remember taking a course in retailing in high school, and the instructor said, you know, when you're working in a store, some guy comes in with horse manure on his boots. Treat him with respect just like anybody else because, and this is in New York State, he may have that horse manure on his boots because he owns several, which takes a little bit of money. I know people who own horses and the great responsibility there is there, but sometimes we judge people like that. I try to look at people, and if their hands are a little grimy, I think this may be the guy who would fix my furnace in the middle of the night, in the middle of the winter, or somebody who could fix my car. You know, but we look at people and we tend to judge them by that, and there are other characteristics that we judge. And he shall not judge by the sight of his eyes, neither reprove after the hearing of his ears. Sometimes we hear things, don't we? We hear things, and if we hear them from the right people at the right time about somebody we don't like, we tend to believe them. But with righteousness shall he judge the poor, and reprove with equity the meek of the earth, and shall smite the earth in the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he shall slay the wicked. This is true justice. And again, we see miscarriages of justice all the time on both sides. You know, they're coming up with a lot of DNA evidence now and finding that some of these people who were accused and have spent decades in prison are innocent. You know, it doesn't, now that they have DNA evidence, it doesn't match up. I've seen a couple of cases in the church. One man whose son was stabbed to death, literally cut to pieces, in the presence of a whole bunch of people. The perpetrator got off. I don't know why. It was in a small county, and apparently they didn't have much of a prosecuting attorney, and the guy who did it was able to afford a great attorney who got him off. Another family whose daughter was raped and murdered, and later they, through DNA evidence, found a guy, brought him in, had him tried, and for some reason, I understand, the jury wasn't thoroughly convinced he was guilty, had a shred of doubt, and figured, and I don't know how they figured this because it's pretty basic law, that, look, we're not going to convict him, but eventually they'll get a jury that will. Well, they had overlooked the principle of double jeopardy, where if you are acquitted of a crime, you can write a book about it, and you can't be retried for it. So we're not going to have that kind of justice, or shall we call it injustice. And righteousness shall be the girdle of his loins, and faithfulness the girdle of his reins. So we will have true justice under the government of Jesus Christ, and we will, you know, it's our purpose to help administer that government and be a part of it and see justice truly done, not by what we see or what we hear or what we suspect, but in truth and in righteousness. Of course, Jesus Christ can see beyond what we just see or we hear, and hopefully we'll have that power as well. So we'll see true justice. We'll see personal integrity. Isaiah 32, verse 2. This verse reminds me of, I guess, a couple of men I've known in the church who fit this description, I feel, even in today's age. Isaiah 32 and verse 2. A man shall be as a hiding place from the wind and a covert from the tempest, rivers of water in a dry place, the shadow of a great rock in a weary land. Men are going to have personal integrity, be able to be trusted. There's a man here who is from New York State. So, being from New York State, we got to know each other a little bit, And he said, where are you from? I said, Springfield. He says, oh, I used to work in Springfield. He's one of us. He did it in reverse. I'm a New Yorker by choice, a hillbilly, or by birth, and a hillbilly by choice. He went the other way, although he lives in the hills in New York State, in upstate New York. But he's from originally from Golden City, and he knows a family there that's been in the news lately. And it's a tragic news story. Their 12-year-old daughter disappeared. She was actually abducted in plain view in a city park by a man she knew who used to work for her father, who, you know, came up and said, look, my kids are, I can't find my kids. Can you get in the truck and help me find them? She disappeared. He was arrested, charged initially with kidnapping. Several days later, they found her body buried west of town. And she'd been raped and murdered. Things like that happen. It's horrible, but we hear it all the time in the news. Children who are abducted. But this draws a picture of a man of integrity. Can you imagine where this becomes the rule? A man shall be as a hiding place from the wind. And again, I've known, well, hopefully hundreds of men in the church who fit that description. There's one or two that stand out in my mind who are those kind of trusted individuals. Won't it be great when that's every man? When every man, you can tell your son or your daughter, if you get lost, just go up to anybody you see and ask them to help you find your way home. Would you do that today? Would you advise your children to do that today? I hope not. I mean, the thing is now go to someone you know and trust. Of course, even in that case, in Golden City, this girl may have had some trust in this guy because it was someone she knew who worked for her father at one time and apparently had to grab her and throw her into the truck, which is what tipped people off to the fact that something, in plain sight of many people in a city park. So that's something horrible that happens today, but won't it be great in God's kingdom when that man of integrity, that applies to every man, every man. And we would be able to tell our kids, you know, if you're lost, just go ask somebody to help you find your way home or whatever. You can't do that and should not do that today, kids. Education will change. Isaiah 2 and verse 2. We read some of this earlier. Isaiah 2 and verse 2. And it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and nations shall flow to it. And many people shall go and say, come ye, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of God of Jacob, and he will teach us his ways. People from all over the earth wanting to learn God's ways. And we will walk in his paths, for out of Zion shall go forth the law, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And then, as we mentioned earlier, they shall judge and rebuke all nations, and shall rebuke many people. They shall beat their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not rise up against nation with the sword, lift the sword against nation. Neither shall they learn war anymore. A time of positive instruction and education. Education based on God's standards, not on things we figure out for ourselves, because, you know, that doesn't always work out well. Isaiah 30 and verse 20. Isaiah 30 and verse 20. And though the Lord give you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction, yet shall not your teachers be removed into a corner anymore, but your eyes shall see your teachers. I guess that's a good student-teacher ratio, as we'd call it today. I guess a lot of teachers who are accessible. And your ears shall hear a word behind you saying, I've always assumed that this is talking about spirit beings who will be there to guide people, not just in the classroom, but in their lives, and saying, this is the way, walk you in it when you turn to the right hand or turn to the left. You start to go off in the wrong direction, and there's somebody there to say, hey, hold it, you're not going to do that. Up close and personal education constant education based, again, on God's law. We'll also see real leadership. Isaiah 32, verse 1. Behold, a king shall reign in righteousness, and princes shall rule in judgment. True leadership. True leadership. We have that to look forward to. I mean, and good government. We had a leadership class here a few years ago, and I remember we had like table topics. Now, some of you guys who were in Spokesman's Club remember table topics, and the guy who was administering it asked the question, would you like to live in a theocracy? I forgot how he put it, but a society that's led by religion. I thought about it. I didn't respond. Well, I was co-directing the club, so I didn't think it was my place to respond at that point. My first impression was no. That was not the desired answer. But if you look back through history and look at, I'm kind of big on history. I don't want to overstate my credentials when it comes to history because Tim Martins is here, and he's a history teacher. So I'll be careful and I'll tread softly. It's like trying to use big, long Greek words when I know somebody here might be a Greek scholar. But when you look back through history and you see some of the governments that were run by religious standards, it's horrible. How many of you read about the Inquisitions, where the Catholic Church ruled probably all of Europe and people were put to death because they didn't quite meet those standards? Maybe some of them because they were worshiping on Saturday instead of Sunday. Various other things. Judaizing, I think they called it. But would you want to live in a society like that? You can see instance after instance of where people trying to run their society by religion have done horrible things. I don't want to pick on the Catholics because during the Reformation, my son-in-law was nice enough to give me a book about London and its history. And I read it and talked about the Reformation there and how a lot of the Catholic priests were asked to go along with it. When they didn't, they were executed. It wasn't that their heads were just chopped off. They were eventually, but they were tortured publicly, drawn and quartered, you know, where you tied a person's four limbs to four horses and sent them off in opposite directions. And they were torn apart by a religious society. And, of course, we can see that now. If we want to blame other people, we can look at the Islamic world and some of the extremism there and some of the persecution that's done. But do you want to live in a religious society? Unless it's run by God directly, which it will be, I don't want to be a part of it. You know, when man gets involved, then it gets all messed up. But hopefully, in the future, it's going to be a true theocracy. A true theocracy where God is indeed in charge and not a bunch of people who think they represent God. Revelation 5 and verse 9. Revelation 5. There we're getting into the New Testament. Revelation 5 and verse 9. Revelation 5 and verse 9. And they sung a new song, saying, you are worthy to take the book and to open the seals thereof, for thou wast slain, talking about Jesus Christ, and has redeemed us to God by thy blood out of every kindred, every tongue, and every people, and every nation. And has made unto our God kings and priests who shall reign in the earth. Again, a righteous administration made up of spirit beings who will be kings and priests. Hopefully you look forward to that. Revelation 20. Revelation 20, verse 29. I think I've lost that verse. Let's go to Luke 22 and verse 29. Somebody stole those verses out of my Bible that I just quoted. Some of you have written them down and find out, well, sure enough, they're not there. But Luke 22, verse 29 is there. Luke 22, verse 9, I hope it's there. And I will appoint unto you a kingdom as my Father hath appointed unto me, that you may eat and drink at my table, in my kingdom, and shall sit on thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel. This is addressed initially to the apostles who will judge the 12 tribes of Israel. You know, righteous leadership, righteous government. Mark 10 and verse 42. Mark 10 and verse 42. Mark 10:42, and Jesus called them to him and said unto them, you know that they which are accounted to rule over the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and their great ones exercise authority upon them. And we see this around the world, you know, horrible leadership, dictatorships. I mean, if you don't like President Obama, hopefully we're not of a political nature where we're going out and spending a lot of thought and a lot of time bad-mouthing our president, but look at Saddam Hussein. Look at people who have lived in my lifetime, old guy, Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, these people who had complete, total authority and destroyed the nations they were ruling, or at least Adolf Hitler did, and some of the people we see today, President Assad in Syria, you know, who allegedly killed many of his own people, thousands of them, little children and women, with poison gas, something that hasn't been used in war in a long time, since World War I, although I'm sure Hitler used it to kill some of his own people in gas chambers. But we see that. We see Saddam Hussein, who did the same thing with the Kurds, and people who exercise authority, and there's no one to stop them, seemingly. Right now, Assad is kind of, we don't know what's going to happen with him. But so it shall not be among you. Whosoever will be greatest among you, let him be your minister. Your minister, your servant, you know, servant leadership. And whosoever shall be the chiefest, let him be the servant of all. For as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life for a ransom for many. So, we're to be giving as leaders, and the leaders in God's kingdom will be giving. Nobody put any water down there, but that's all right. I'll just cough a couple of times. If I lose my voice, don't call the paramedics. I'll get over it. Another area of change that we're going to see, and this should thrill you personally, we're going to see a change in us. We're going to see a change in us. Our lives, our beings, our priorities, our abilities will change. Thank you very much. Hang on. Drink time. That was pretty good for water. Yeah, that's great. What my wife likes to drink on occasion is something that looks like that, but she usually has a few olives put in it. Real picky about the olives. But this is, that was good. I feel better now. We're going to see a change in us. 1 Thessalonians 4 and verse 15. 1 Thessalonians 4 and verse 15. For this we say unto you by the word of the Lord, that we which are alive and remain unto the coming of the Lord shall not prevent them which fall asleep. For the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout. Again, inescapable. With the voice of an archangel, with the trump of God, and the dead in Christ shall rise first. Then they which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. So shall we ever be with the Lord. We're going to be in good company for eternity. For eternity. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 51. Of course, this is a section of scripture we often read at funerals. It's very encouraging. 1 Corinthians 15 in verse 51. Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall all we shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed. You know, likens death here to a sleep, a sleep. In the moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump, the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we will be changed. Yes, we have corruptible bodies now. We have corruptible minds. We don't always think right. We can always go off the deep end thinking one way or another. And we have bodies, like I say, that hurt, that occasionally become diseased, that sometimes become chronically diseased, where we may die from it, but we will be changed. In the moment, in the twinkling of an eye, it says, for this corruptible must put on incorruption, this mortal immortality. So when this corruptible shall put on incorruption, and this mortal shall have put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying which is written, death is swallowed up in victory. You know, death is a type of victory because you've completed your course. You know, can you imagine what it's like to maybe die, and hopefully this won't be the case, but let's say you were dying in horrible pain. All of a sudden, you're asleep. There's nothing. In your recollection, the next second would be the most joyous, healthy moment of your existence. You'll be with Jesus Christ. You'll be in his kingdom. You'll feel good, better than you've ever felt. So it's a victory. O death, where is your sting? O grave, where is your victory? The sting of death is sin. The strength of sin is the law. But thanks be to God, which gives us victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be you steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. For as much as you know that the Lord's your labor is not in vain in the Lord. So we have that change to look forward to. That change, Daniel 7 and verse 27. Daniel 7, 27. And the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominion shall serve and obey him. Jesus Christ will be in charge. His kingdom will rule the entire universe. And back in Daniel 2 and verse 44, talking about change. Again, we're going to see these tremendous changes when Jesus Christ returns. And hopefully we're looking forward to it. We're celebrating that here at the feast. Yes, we can enjoy a little of the good life, perhaps, a nice meal, great fellowship. But overall, hopefully we're here to celebrate in advance the kingdom of God and the return of Jesus Christ. Daniel 2 and verse 44. Daniel 2, 44. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom, and it shall never be destroyed. The kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume these kingdoms and will stand forever. Not until the next administration comes in. You know, not until something else, you know, God is going to, certainly things will change, things will grow. We have a wonderful future to look forward to, but the overall changes that we see, they're not going to change forever. God's kingdom is not going to disappear. It's not going to be traded in for a new and improved model. It's going to last forever. So hopefully, brethren, we can look at the world today, but look at the world tomorrow. Not look back at the good old days, which, come on, really weren't all that good. But look forward to the real, I'll say good old days, the real good days, which are yet to come.